I can see how that would be better.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Nick Glover, Tim Wick, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, we're recording at OmegaCon 2018 in Siren, Wisconsin. We're going to tell you about some of the board games we played this weekend and what we think of them.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God. I'm your host, Nick Glover. I'm joined, as always, by my co-hosts, Molly Glover.
Hello.
And Tim Wick.
Oh, good morning.
And we are recording on Sunday morning at OmegaCon. Siren, Wisconsin.
You don't hear any cheering because it's a Slack con and everyone's like sleeping or doing something else. They're not here for that.
We're the only ones that aren't asleep right now.
Indeed.
Probably. So, OmegaCon, for those of you who don't know, is a Slack convention where a bunch of nerds from mostly the Twin Cities area take over a kind of rural lodge hotel.
Yeah, camping, hunting lodge.
Yeah, and it's pajamas, board games, and alcohol, kind of.
This year feels extra perfect because it's been kind of this really slow, light snowfall.
Pretty idyllic. We've gotten about an inch and a half of snow altogether, but it's been like very gentle and nice.
Yeah, so it just feels feels kind of like we're isolated away from the world.
Yes.
So we came into the hotel as at the end of fall, and we're leaving the hotel at the beginning of winter.
Absolutely. Aww,
that's such a great way of putting
true.
It. Even though
also in Minnesota, it went from being like, 40s in the day to suddenly being like in the teens. Like very the high is like 18 degrees now, and it's very cold.
So we've been hiding indoors where there's lots of cozy fires and cozy pajamas and playing games and stuff all weekend. Or seeing movies and whatever. However you want to slack, that's mm-hmm. how people do it.
That's right.
So at OmegaCon, we like to try a few new board games.
The one time a year we actually talk about board games on this podcast.
New ones especially. Yeah.
I'm tired of board games a lot of the time.
It's like a good job.
Yeah.
The Shoemaker's Children has no shoes.
Yeah, the Shoemaker's Children have no shoes. Exactly.
Yeah. So, Tim, did you play anything new this year?
I actually played a bunch of new board games, which is kind of surprising. I run the movie room at OmegaCon, but I this year I kind of was like, I'm going to start the movies and not watch them and go play board games. So I played a bunch. I will talk about my favorite, because there were some that I played that I really didn't care for, and maybe I'll get to those in a little bit. But the one that I played that was probably my favorite, I'll get to my critiques in a minute.
Yeah.
Is called Get Packing.
Okay.
And what Get Packing is, it's a game with a bunch of different pieces there. They're plastic pieces, they're different shapes, they're three-dimensional, mm-hmm. and they're kind of like tangrams, if you know what a tangram mm-hmm. is. Yeah. So it's got bases that are different shapes, and you get a suitcase, and what happens is you flip a card, and it shows you the items that need to be packed in your suitcase.
Okay.
And so everybody has a group of those items. They have to grab the same items, and you have to figure out how to get the items to fit in your suitcase and be able to close it completely.
Mm-hmm.
And whoever can do that first gets the card. So you need three cards to win.
I'd be so good at that game.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think I would be, and I won. And I don't know how that happened. I think it's mostly because it's actually really challenging because, mm-hmm. Part of it is figuring out how these pieces fit into the rectangular shape. But pretty much everything, you have to stack it, and figuring out the second level then becomes a real nightmare.
Oh, sure.
And there are times where there are pieces that seem to nest extremely well, and you think, I have to do is nest these pieces, but it turns out, nope, that's not the solution at all. Those pieces doesn't work at all.
It kind of sounds like Number 9, if you've played that game.
Yes. Number 9 was a big game, and I think
last year it was new,
So, really fast. My biggest critique about the game is replayability.
Yeah. Oh.
I think after you've played it a few times, you start to get familiar with the patterns of how the pieces fit together. And probably somebody who's played it numerous times is going to be better than somebody who's brand new.
It's a game you buy and you play a handful of times, and then like you just pack it up and hand it off to a friend.
Kind of.
Yeah.
Kind of that kind of game.
Those locked.
Unlocked. Games.
Yeah, the card game escape rooms like are like that. Like, you could do them maybe twice.
Sure.
But not really.
Yeah, but I mean, I enjoyed it, but I didn't... I was like, my biggest critique was, well, I would probably play this like five or six times, and then I'd be pretty much done with it.
So that was Get Packing?
Get Packing.
All right.
Is the name of
it. Cool. Do we want to do... Do you want him to do all the ones
he
likes?
Tim, what else did you play?
We'll just... Okay. I played Scoville... which is a game about planting chili peppers.
Oh, cool!
Into it,
And so the goal is to grow the most spicy chili peppers.
Oh, sure.
And cook the spiciest chili.
Okay.
And if you manage to do that, it's a resource placement and movement game, and it is like a lot of those games. There's several different ways to earn points in the way.
Yeah.
The way to win is to really balance your approach. If you really focus on one way of earning points, you're probably not going to win. You need to kind of figure out, well, what's my primary source of points, but also what are some other ways to earn points?
Is it a shared board, or do you have your own like?
It's
garden?
A shared board, so everybody has a big plot of chilies.
Okay.
And as you plant chilies, what you can start to do is create hybrid chilies. So you move your little farmer around the board, and every time you walk between chili peppers, you get to harvest a chili, and it's a hybrid chili based on the two chili peppers you're next to.
Oh, sure. Cool.
Like mushroom planting in Kingdom of Loathing.
Or Animal Crossing, the flower hybrid.
Sure, yeah. Exactly. So you're creating hybrid chilies. The better the more hybrid the chili is, the more valuable it is, the spicier chilies you can bake, the better cards you can buy for upgrades and stuff like that.
Okay.
So it was, again, I enjoyed that game. It wasn't a game I would probably... buy for myself, but it is a game that if somebody said, did you want to play this, I would say yes.
What was the art like? Was it like cartoony, or was it more realistic?
The art's pretty cartoony.
Cool.
I've got a picture of it, which isn't going to help our listeners, but there's
that's cute.
Yeah, it's just cute little cartoony art.
Kind of looks almost like Plants vs. Zombies-ish.
Mm-hmm.
Like a backyard or a garden from that, almost.
Right. So then the games I'm going to critique a little bit, I played something called the Voting Game.
Okay.
Which is...
Too soon.
Yeah, it's a little like apples to apples.
It looks just like Cards Against Humanity in the picture you have on your phone
it,
there.
It does a little bit. But how it works is y'all get... everybody's given a number. So if we're playing, I would be one, Molly would be two, Nick would be three.
Mm-hmm.
And then a question is asked, and we all need to vote on... who we think best fits that question.
I think we were playing a game next to your table.
Yeah.
While you were playing this, and some of the folks you were playing with were very loud and very enthusiastic about the game.
You noticed that? Okay.
I did.
So what I noticed was, you know, the questions are often very racy or slightly.
Who's most likely to be able to tie a cherry stem with their tongue?
Yes, those kind of things. Or questions like, who is most likely to accidentally feed their children pot brownies?
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Or that kind
of
thing.
Yeah, yeah. They're rated R, PG-13 questions.
Yeah,
like,
risque.
Risque. Mm-hmm. My biggest problem with the game is if there's a loud, obnoxious person at your table, at least half the questions are basically boiled down to, if you don't know the people at the table that well, who here is the loudest, most obnoxious asshole? And then they get voted on a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because... they're the most loudest, most obnoxious asshole.
What are the win conditions?
You know, nobody managed to explain that to me. I assume...
like Cards Against Humanity. It doesn't really matter.
It doesn't
probably
really matter.
A way,
the game is the game. It's not about winning.
It's just about being silly. So there were two groups of cards. There was who's the loudest, most obnoxious, and who is the person most comfortable doing weird shit around other people. So I got voted on for all the... things about who's the person most comfortable
with. Yeah.
Because there was no Molly Glover in the group.
Yeah, well, and, you ought to have a substitute Glover. That makes sense.
And then...
Just who's the biggest theater asshole?
Yeah. And then there was the who's the loudest, most obnoxious person who clearly would do all the illegal shit.
Right.
And it was amusing, but I just felt like, again, there wasn't a lot of replayability there. It might be more fun in a group of people who know each other really well.
It sounds definitely like a drinking game. Like you would play while drinking. Not
it also feels like a game that would, like you say, if you know people really well, or where there's people who have a lot of similar interests. Like, if it's who's the more likely to feed their kid pop brownies, and you've got me, Nick, Eric Knight, and like three other people at the table who all like, you know, like potentially like don't have kids, but might have anything else. Right? Like, it's like, then what do you decide? Like, there's some fun things in there, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Likely, you know, one of the questions that I got voted on, who always sees the glass half full. I'm generally a positive person, but if the group that you just named is at a table with that question, we'd all be like, well, shit, everybody here is pretty positive.
Yeah, exactly. And that's more fun.
You know, so I would say you're better off playing with people you know.
That's cool.
And then the other game I played, and I don't know, this might be personal. We played The Godfather, which was introduced to us by a friend of the show, Brianne Bilyeu.
Yeah.
All right.
Fairly new game. Again, a resource allocation game. You're placing your mobsters around the city of New York to try and take control of various neighborhoods. There is definitely some whacking involved, where you can kill off monsters.
You whacked off a lot of dudes.
Yeah, you whack off a lot of dudes.
Yeah, toss them whack them off good.
You whack them off good and toss them into the Hudson River.
Get them wet after you whack them off.
And the thing is, it's only four rounds, but the rounds are so goddamn long. And it took like 4 hours to play this game.
Oh,
Maybe it was only like 3.5 with a half hour.
Still, four rounds, an hour per round?
I know, and the thing was that, and again, this may be personal. I'm the kind of person who, when I play a game and there's like five people playing the game with me, and there's a certain amount of contemplation required in each play, by the time it gets to me, I've thought through what are the five or six options that I'm going to have by the time it gets to my play, and what's my best choice, or what are my best two choices, and what am I going to do if the couple of best choices are gone. So when I get to my turn, I'm like, well, I know what I'm going to do, and I'm going to make the play, and I'm going to get on with it.
Yep.
And I was playing with a bunch of people that when we get to their turn, they were like, wow, I now need to spend 10 minutes thinking about it. And it was just like, play your fucking card. It's just a game.
We have a friend that is difficult to game for that exact reason. He needs to talk through every single turn he has, every option available to him before he can make his decision. Yeah.
And it just and that was my frustration. I had not, when I looked at the game and when it was like, oh, it's only four rounds.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, okay, well, this game's going to be about hour to maybe 2 hours, depending on how long it takes to learn the mechanics of the game. And when it ended up being 3.5 hours long, I was just like, oh my God, I want to be done.
If it had gone faster, did you like the game? Did you like the mechanics? Was the actual game part fun, regardless of how long it took everyone to play it?
Yeah, the mechanics were interesting. There was a lot of variety to it.
Is it like bluffing, or what is it?
No, it's not bluffing, but there's The way the resource allocation works, you only have a certain number of people, and you can only allocate one person per round, but you can also do jobs, and doing a job can be done in place of allocating a person. So part of the mechanic is figuring out how to get the largest number of moves out of the resources you have.
So are you running a mob, basically?
You're running a mob.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
Is the slowness of the game at all due to playing it for the first time? Like, would the game be much faster if you were well-versed in the rules?
I think that would have helped. Certainly the first couple of rounds where you don't have nearly as many resources to allocate went very slow because people didn't understand entirely how to allocate their resources and work the mechanics. Mm-hmm. But then again, the last round went equally slow and everybody pretty much understood what they were doing.
Sure. Okay, that's good to know.
So it's a good game, but I guess I was not nuts about playing it with five people. I think four might have been optimal in terms of the number of people to play. And if you don't have a lot of patience for people who take time to think about their moves, not the game for you.
All right.
There's my roundup of the games that I played to talk about.
I think everything that Molly or I played, the other one played.
Yeah, we played all our games together this weekend for sure. Except for, I will just before you start, can I just say again, I know I've talked about it a little before.
Oh my God.
Little Dragon's Cafe is so disappointing. I keep trying to play it more, right? And so now I'm on to the next story, and it's like, cool, all right, the next story. So maybe my dragon will get bigger. Nope, still not bigger. So I still can't get anywhere any faster, and I can't get past certain things, and I just have to keep going to places I've been to see if there's new stuff there, which There isn't, but maybe. And
is this a mobile game?
This is a Switch game.
Okay.
Yeah, I talked about it a bunch before. I was very excited for it, and then I was not because it's not super great. But
you're still trying.
I'm still trying because I spent $60 on it, and I'm gonna get $60 of enjoyment out of it. God damn it! But okay, so the thing that happened that I thought was ridiculous is every story point is there's someone new who comes to my cafe who has a problem that I need to solve with food. Right.
Okay.
Right. So there was a girl who ran away from home because her mom died and her dad made her mad, and like we helped her like heal her grief over her mom and her dad. Right. There was a witch who was very upset because she was a witch and she didn't think she should ever have human food. That was a weird one. There was a little kid who ran away from home because everyone was calling him a baby and he's not a baby and he's going to show them. So my fourth guest is a ghost, a spooky, nasty, scary ghost who scares all my customers away. But then we can see him and touch him and he's not sure why. And then he just falls asleep, and you carry him to his bed where he is now sleeping, and that's the new story point. So I don't know what the fuck I'm supposed to feed a tangible ghost, but
you have a sleeping ghost in your house.
I have a sleeping ghost in my house, a tangible ghost who's very upset that we can see him.
Okay.
Yeah. So anyway, that's my Switch roundup right now. But yes, so, Nick and I played all the same board games.
And the thing I did that Molly didn't was. I had like a month's worth of comics backlog.
Oh yeah.
So I just brought like a bag full of bagged and boarded comics and like took like 3 hours while Molly took a nap and went and sat by the fire and just read comics, and it was fucking glorious.
Yeah, I saw you doing that. It looked like you were in a happy place.
It was nice. It was nice. Like it's usually I read week to week, so like I don't get to sit down and read like two sequential issues for a story. And I got to do that 3 times. Mm. And so it was like, oh, wait, there's another issue. I can just read the next one right now. It was very satisfying.
I will say one of the nice things about OmegaCon, and any kind of con like this, if you ever go to it, is if you want to sit down by the fire and read a book, people won't bug you.
Usually not.
Oh, look at that. They're reading.
I got lightly socialized with in a way that I was receptive to that. I wasn't like, I think had I been like, fuck off, I'm reading, in a polite way, I think they would have fucked off. Yeah, it was. I think my favorite game we played this weekend was Discover.
Discover is the new game. So Fantasy Flight Games put out 2 games in like the last month.
That's right. Fantasy Flight Games is putting out.
Yeah. But so they're a new kind of game that we call unique games, where every copy of the game is unique.
Okay.
So KeyForge is one of them. Mm-hmm. Discover is the board game. Corey Kineska, one of our greatest, like he's a
solid designer.
He created this game. It's a board game where there's a bunch of different scenarios. The general idea is you and the other players, it's cooperative. You wake up in terrain and you're not sure why you got there and scenario. Okay. So there's island, bayou, badlands, desert, mountains. And I think there's one other one. And that's so you can get any combination of these different terrain tiles. And there's like three sets of tiles in each of those terrains. And you're going to get two, one of one kind, one of another kind, right? Okay. So that's where some of the uniqueness comes in.
Right.
Every copy of the game, up to like the first 100,000 copies of the game, is unique from every other copy in the game.
Wow.
Yeah. We did it with an algorithm.
I'm just fascinated.
And very careful file work.
I'm fascinated by the logistics of producing, mass producing something.
Jason Walden, who is like my counterpart, the other board and card game producer, he was on the project. Like, I can't even, it's amazing what they did. Wow. Yeah. So, it's great.
The gameplay is like, there's a Steam, or I think it's on consoles game called Don't Starve. What was that game on the DS where you're shipwrecked on an island and you have to...
Lost in Blue.
It's similar to those. It is a survival resource harvesting to live game where you only have so much energy to spend gathering firewood and fishing...
Water.
...and fighting potential critters and threats while exploring, maintaining a fire... And helping one another.
And to uncover the story, you have to explore to be able to advance
Right.
Through the plot.
But if you if
so
you
part of it is survival and part of it is how the fuck do we get out of
right.
survival?
Yes. Situation.
And there's a little bit of a story that unfolds as you kind of deliberately explore. There's also all sorts of symbols on the map that don't mean anything unless you trigger other things. They might not even matter for your scenario. And I'm guessing they might not even matter for a scenario you have in your game.
Yep. Because it's randomly.
Because of the randomization.
Because it's randomly.
Yep.
So there's a lot of mystery in the board. Like, there could be all... Like, I feel like there's at least two big mysteries that we barely scratched the surface on our scenario.
I would replay it, yeah.
Like, we won. We got out. Like, one person died. Three of us got out.
I died because I had three wounds, and then I still went and attacked a bull, and then the bull killed me. And then
so you sacrificed yourself?
I did.
Needlessly. No, not to save the party.
No, I just wanted pelts.
So it there was, like, there's definitely, like, a locked door we didn't open and, like, a mysterious amulet that unlocks things.
Yeah.
And some weird bull-worshipping cult on this island.
Yeah.
That, like, didn't even go into that shit. We just got the fuck off the island.
So do you know, Molly, you'd be the only one who could answer this, like, how many different scenarios there are? I mean, how many come with a game?
You get three.
Okay.
With each game.
I thought there were five.
You get three with each game.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure. I'm like 99% sure. And then I'm trying to remember how many there were. So he wrote four, but then there were like five versions of four. I can't remember exactly, but because I was on studio approval for it, which means I got to go over every single file. I don't remember any of it, which is nice. But because that's one of the things about, like, for me being good at proofreading is I can read and proofread an entire thing and not retain any of it because I'm not, once it's gone, it's gone. So I don't feel like, it's not like, oh, this game is ruined for me because I've read everything.
Right.
It's not like that at all. People were buying, we got two copies.
Yeah.
People were buying three to four copies to make sure they could get, and then there's a big trading thread at work where people are trading terrain sets and tile sets and character bags. They're like, oh, I got character bag 3B, but I've already got a 3B. Does anyone have like 3A or 4C, like, to try to like trade around?
Huh.
Because you can just take the tile, the punch board, and the booklet and hand them over to somebody, like,
right,
to trade, and the scenario cards and stuff. So, yeah, no, it's really cool. It was insane logistically. Like, it took 2 years. He's been working on it for 2 years. Like, it was crazy to get it done.
It reminded me a little bit of Survive, too, like Escape from Atlantis or whatever.
Oh, the game with the island.
Yeah.
Is it called Survive? With the sharks.
With the sharks.
There's the other one that's the desert.
It sounds more complicated.
It's definitely more complicated.
How long does it take to play?
An hour to an hour and a half is what it's expected to be.
Our initial game, so if you include the time spent to desprue, and there are a few pain points with figuring out the cards situation.
Yeah, it wasn't super clear. It wasn't super clear how you put everything. You were supposed to put everything together in numerical order and then use cards. So, like, that was kind of weird. Like, yeah.
But including those pain points and unpacking and desprueing, I think it was 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not bad.
First scenario.
So I would say, I think it's an hour to an hour and a half play
time. And I think that's the lightest scenario. Like, I think that's probably the shortest one.
Oh, yeah, it's the intro.
But the other ones would be shorter because we'd know the rules and stuff.
Okay.
But that was the game where, after we finished playing, I was like, God, I kind of hope we can get in another one of those.
Yeah.
That was super fun.
If we could, I would play it again.
Yeah,
I wish we had time.
Right.
We can play it together, though. It's two-player.
It just feels like it's better with four.
It's one to four players. So
You can play alone?
You can play alone, and then there's different scaling for if you play, and there's different rules for if you play alone.
Wow.
But then also, you can also play, like, you know, where we each control two characters.
Things like that
to make it a four-player game, you know? Like, you can kind of do it however
easily.
You want.
You could easily control four characters alone.
Or there's rules to do just one character, and then it's a lot harder.
And is it likely that there are going to be like new scenarios coming out? And
it's ours. We own it's our IP. It's unlicensed, so yes, I would say it's very likely. But I don't. Do not take this as any official word. I have no.
You have no secret insider.
That's not Fantasy Flight Molly. That's just some bitch.
That's just me being like, I don't know why we wouldn't. It would be weird to not.
Unless the game just failed.
I don't even think it's that. I think it's just more. There's probably other forces at work.
Sure.
It's been very funny because lots of completionists are very angry at the concept of this game. Uh-huh. Because it's pretty much impossible to get everything unless you actually like spend a shit ton of money or like go on Craigslist and stuff, and people are really mad.
Do a lot of trading.
People are really mad.
That is some serious first world problem.
We've gotten some letters from people who are like righteously angry and are like calling us like evil money grubbing monsters because we're making them spend so much money to get a complete set of this game, and it's like no one's making you do shit.
Like do they write Wizards of the Coast angry letters that there's no way they can get a complete set of magic cards?
Yes, people do that all the time. But there is a way you can get a complete set of magic cards. You can buy them. That's the thing you're buying. It's a collectible game, so you know what you're getting into. People are mad about this because it's not a collectible game. It's a board game, and like it's very funny. Anyway.
The other game Molly and I played.
It's Keyforge.
Oh, we also played Fallout again.
Oh, we played Fallout again with Allie. Yeah, we taught Allie and her friend Robin and
Jared.
Her husband Jared for a little while. We taught because Jared had to go how to play Fallout. So I GM'd it. And
that was the most fun I've had playing Fallout, I think.
I really think the best way to play Fallout is to have someone be the GM who is keeping track of everyone's actions and turns and reading the cards and like keeping it and like reminding everyone to check their agenda points.
I think it goes
everything.
Faster.
Yeah, but in any event.
Keyforged.
Keyforge. Keyforge is the new collectible card game. Not even collectible card game. It's the new card game from Fantasy Flight Games. It is also a unique game. So this one is even crazier. You're going to love this. All right. This one is Richard Garfield designed it.
The guy who made Magic.
And Android Netrunner. So this game, every pack, so when you go buy a pack, so you go buy a box of Keyforge, and you will get the two starter decks, which everyone gets, they're the same.
Okay.
And then you also get some decks in there that are these packs. And the packs are 30-something cards, cardboard pack, each pack individual from any other deck. Your deck is unique, completely
millions
unique.
Millions of combinations.
Your deck is unique. Your deck has a unique name that is procedurally generated by a computer, so they are ridiculous. I have a deck that's called The Woman That Simply Identifies Dice. We have a deck that was called
Throat Car, The Fortune Teller of Anger.
Yeah, they're crazy. They're super fun.
Jeremy Stomberg had one that was like Mifflin, the mischievous one of high life or something like that. It's like, what are you, steal cheap beer?
And so the names are great. So there is no deck building.
Right.
You open it up and that's your deck.
Okay.
And that's what you play with.
And so I think it's worth noting, so there's six houses, which are like your colors in Magic.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Each deck will have three houses.
Yep.
So you're not going to get stuck with I only have like three cards from this one house, therefore I'm kind of fucked.
Yeah, right. It's spread.
It's going to be an even spread between the three houses.
Yep. There's balance built in.
I mean, so there's the balance is built into the fact that all the cards have to be able to work with each other within a house.
Right.
So you never play. You very rarely are you going to. So what? On a turn, you're going to say, House Shadows. I declare House Shadows, and then you only play House Shadows cards, and you can only use House Shadows cards.
Right.
So in order to balance it, Brad Andres, who is the lead designer developer from our side, mostly what they do, him and Richard and everyone else who worked on it, is to balance within a house, and then overall balance within, you know, like a set, right? Mm-hmm. So it's very tricky, and it's really hard to balance. So your deck might not be good.
Okay.
Like your deck might be shitty. Your deck might be incredible. You might have three copies of six of the best cards of the whole fucking game, right?
Right.
There's no way to know. So
I think it's more like certain card combinations that are incredibly powerful. You don't have any control over making that happen.
Yeah.
But also, like, the challenge is in figuring out a strategy for your deck and getting to know your deck.
So there's going
to
be two kinds of tournament ways. So, like, there'll be the kind where you bring a deck you already know you have that you really like. And then there will be open up a blind pack and just play with the deck you get.
Okay.
Like a draft, right?
Sure.
But like just an open box, blind play. It's super fun. It plays a lot like Magic in the sense that you have a line of creatures that are fighting your other players' creatures. You have like a line of artifacts that are like, you know, ongoing things you use or one-time use things. And then you have actions, which are like instants that, you know, you play anytime. And basically you just, yeah, you declare a house, you play all the cards you want from that house, and then it's the other guy's turn. You're trying to get Amber. Amber, I can't say that without sounding super Minnesotan. You're trying to get Amber so you can forge a key. So you then, so when you get six amber at the start of your turn, if you have six amber, you have to forge a key. You flip over the thing, you forge a key. First person to forge three keys wins the game. It plays fast and fun.
Yeah.
Do keys give you any special abilities?
Nope.
So it's just a victory condition.
Just a victory condition. It's just a way to do three victory points.
There is a balance mechanism where some very powerful cards in the game give you chains.
Mm-hmm.
And chains are essentially a handicap mechanism that starts to limit your hand size.
Oh.
So the more powerful
or your draw ability.
Yep.
So the further into stacking on more and more chains you get and using those very powerful cards, the more you limit yourself in your hand size.
Yeah. And those are pretty rare, so like they don't come
I think we
like,
only had
much.
It happen once.
Yeah. It's mostly there for design space going forward and stuff,
okay.
but yeah, it's great. It's super fun. You honestly, like, you don't really, the nice thing is you don't need to get a starter set in order to play it, really. Like, because you can use any counter you want for stun and for damage and for amber and for keys. Like, you could really do anything for that. Obviously, if you have the starter kit, you know, you're going to have all the fun little bits to go with it, but you could just buy a deck and play the game and as long as someone knew the rules.
How many
packs
did the starter kit come with? Two?
I think it came with four.
Really?
I think it came with four packs in there. I'm pretty
sure. $10 packs?
I think so.
Oh.
Yeah.
So the cool thing about a starter pack is you get the two decks.
The starter decks that are set.
That you can just play alone, back and forth. Mm-hmm. They're pretty balanced. But then also, if it comes with four more decks, mm-hmm. a starter pack comes with six decks.
It's a good deal.
Like, you could buy that, and that is like a tournament kit for mm-hmm. a night.
Huh.
For like a group of friends.
Yeah, it's super fun.
And you can make each other trade decks and stuff like that. Like, it's great in that regard.
And just to clarify, so you keep the decks together. You don't mix and match.
Nope. No mixing and matching. Right. Yep. Your deck is your deck, and it's right here, and then you go online and you register it with its name and your name.
A QR code.
Yeah, there's a QR code. So you can, with your phone or online, you can just go on, you scan your deck in, and then you can start recording your wins and losses if you want.
Oh, wow.
Like, if you feel like it. And then you can see how your deck is stacking up against other decks with their crazy names.
You can. I think it's worth mentioning that you can't mix and match the cards because each unique deck, the unique name of the deck you're playing is on the back of every single
mm-hmm.
card.
That's the next thing mm-hmm. I was going to ask. Yep. Is there a way to identify it? So?
You literally can't mix and match.
Yeah.
They are, the cards themselves are fucking unique.
Wow. It's super cool. And so the other cool thing about it is that it's a new IP for us. It's our own IP. Keyforge is a new world. So the art is really hilarious. It's a very like graphic, comic-y kind of style. Like lots of bold colors and like kind of ridiculous, crazy. There's like, you know, there's like the more like woodlandsy, you know, house. And then there's like the trolley house. And there's the sci-fi house. And there's the science-based one. And there's Mars. And there's all these things.
It really reminds me a lot of or makes me think of like League of Legends or Overwatch mm-hmm. or World of Warcraft, the Blizzard IPs, where they have distinct groups with very, very, like, you can look at a monster art and be like, that's going to be
Brobnar.
Like, that's going to be House Brobnar card for sure. Or like, that's going to be, you know, whatever. Sentinel, whatever it is.
Yeah, yeah.
Like they're all very distinct and they all have a harmonious look or design.
Yeah, it's really cool. I highly suggest you pick it up and get into it because I think it's going to be like kind of the new hotness for a while. And it's, the nice thing is it's easy to play and it's something that I think you can like if you like Magic but you don't like having to keep up with everything in order to be competitive.
Yeah.
You know, like that's the best part about this.
If your biggest complaints about collectible card games are that people look on forums to find out what the hot meta is and then go on eBay and buy all those cards and build those same decks that everyone else is playing, you literally can't do that in this game.
Yeah, it's why we quit Destiny, was because it was just impossible to keep up with anymore. And every time we went to tournaments, it was like, oh, everyone's just playing with the combination that's winning.
Oh, so, today's all Palpatine decks. Cool.
Yeah. Nice. Which is fine, but and that's fine. There's some people who really enjoy that, but this to me is so much more fun because, like, I really like just being like, let's just open this and just shuffle them up and start playing.
So there's a
and
new
try
challenge.
To figure it out on the fly. So you can either be like, let's take the time and look through our decks and like really plan it out, or fuck it, let's shuffle and deal. Let's see what we can figure out.
Yeah.
Like,
and you could have a deck that you're super super cool with and you've played with for a while.
Yeah.
Go up against a brand new deck and it's like, oh shit, I had no idea that I was super weak against this.
Totally, right? Totally. Right. Yeah, it's super fun.
And there's a handicap mechanism too. If you end up discovering that like one deck is inherently stronger always, you can you can level things out between friends, like a gentleman's agreement type thing. But that's there's a mechanism for that built in, which is nice.
Cool. Yeah.
So we have five questions from a listener.
We do have five questions from a listener.
Thank you, listener.
We have five questions from Abram Simons, a Patreon supporter.
Oh,
Patreon
thank you for your support.
So, Abram says, writing new questions is hard. No wonder you're outsourcing this. Damn, they're onto our clever ruse. All right, so question one. Tell me about your favorite character that you have played as. Cosplay, acting, RPG, etc.
Wilson Fisk Kingpin is one of my, probably one of my most successful cosplays. I'll come back to it sometime, but it involves shaving a lot of beard.
Yeah, that beard's too magnificent to lose.
And so, but I, it's a fun costume. Like, when you put on the suit and you've got the big heavy cane with the diamond on it and shit, like the costume comes with presence.
Yeah.
And like, I don't know, people move out of your way a little bit. Like, because even though it's a costume, you're still kind of Wilson Fisk.
Yeah. It's fucking Kingpin, man.
Yeah,
especially
man.
If you're cosplaying it right, and you do. Like, you roll those shoulders back and get your chin up and, swag.
I'm badass Wilson Fisk.
Yeah, yeah. What about you, Tim?
I don't know. You know, if I go back a bit, back in the early days of the Trail of Terror, which is a Halloween show run by the Renaissance Festival, it was a hayride. And I decided to do this hunchback character, and I decided that he spoke like the hunchback from Blazing Saddles, who's the hangman. You go, oh, hello, welcome to Hanging House. And I would like cover my hands with fake blood.
Yeah.
And the audience would be like, why is all the blood on your hands? I'd be like, oh, I'm sorry, I've been rending flesh. And then I'd be like, it's delicious, zesty mint. Because that was the flavor of the fake blood.
So yeah,
I'd
lick
my fingers, and I'd be like, zesty mint. And they go, oh, disgusting. And I don't know.
Super funny.
I enjoyed playing.
Yeah.
So.
That's great. I think acting-wise, I had the most fun playing Weezer Boudreaux when I was in Steel Magnolias in college. That was a lot of fun. But cosplay-wise, it's got to be Neon Joe Werewolf Hunter.
Oh, yeah.
Because that was a costume that I actually, like, I don't usually cosplay in the sense that, like, I don't act like the character and, like, really, you know, get into it as much that way because I get a little self-conscious at Convergence.
Sure.
For some reason. I know it's weird, but, like, with Neon Joe, I knew for a fact that maybe two people other than me and Nick would know who I was, and I just went full into the costume and character.
Like, double down.
I printed temporary tattoos for it so I could have his tattoos because he's got neck and throat and hand tattoos, and so I did the whole goddamn thing, and I really went like crazy.
He has an arm tattoo that's like seven werewolf heads on a skewer.
Yeah, like murdered werewolves.
So I
did the accent. My name Neon Joe Werewolf Hunter.
What kind of accent is that?
Oh, it vague. So yeah, I think that was the most fun I had cosplay.
Yeah.
Alright, question two. If you could have your favorite animator, writer, or director put together a conflict between any two characters, who would the characters be and what would be their conflict?
Ah, oh, goddammit, I've been thinking about this question.
Yeah.
Nick's got an answer.
I totally do. Alright, so the animators that did the animation for the Cowboy Bebop movie.
Okay.
And I'm thinking especially like the fight scenes that are in silhouette or like side-scrolly type perspective with Spike, that are just incredibly wonderful choreographed and animated fight scenes. And I would like to see... So I was originally going to say The Raid... Like characters from The Raid, that the martial arts movie. But then I'm thinking, like, we could slap an IP on this and just do like the movie that the most successful movie that was kind of inspired by the Raid, which was Judge Dredd. I would like to see them animate like in a mega complex fight scene for a Judge Dredd animated rated R movie with that level of detail and animation in the violence, I think would be fucking extraordinary.
And when you say Dredd, you mean Dredd, not Judge Dredd, right?
Right. Yes. Okay. Yeah. Not
the Sylvester Stallone.
No. Yeah, I think that'd be great. It doesn't have to be like the Ma story, but like I would equally be happy if it was.
That's good. All right. I would like to see the Coen brothers write/direct a movie where Mama from Cooking Mama,
oh my God,
and Mary Berry are having a rivalrous cook-off, like in this, and then like it'd be like a Christopher Guest style, like
Mary Berry from like, the Great British.
Yeah, Mary Berry from the Great British Bake Off, and Mama from Cooking Mama, and like they're rivals, and it's like a story about like you know like kind of like Drop Dead Gorgeous or something. It's like a story about the big cook-off that they're
and
doing,
and one of them,
and they're two,
so like a mockumentary kind of thing?
Kind of, and then written by the Coen brothers, so Coen brothers movie.
So if it's Coen brothers, then one of them decides to cheat, and things escalate from there.
Someone
ends up dead in a
chair. Yeah. I want to see the Coen brothers movie of the Mary Berry Cooking Mama.
Who does Mary Berry murder?
I don't know. I don't know. It could be anyone.
She puts someone in a wood chipper.
Yeah.
Oh, not food processor.
You failed Mama.
She puts them in a meat grinder.
A meat grinder and serves them. Yes.
I don't feel I can top that. But
that's all right. You don't have to.
The hardest thing, I'm trying to come up with the creator, because what I'd be fascinated to see would be an Avengers Justice League crossover. But I just...
Amalgam.
I just don't know. I guess I'm going to say Peter Gunn.
Okay.
Because...
James Gunn.
I'm going to say James Gunn because I feel like he would... Because it would have to be something cosmic.
Yeah.
And he's managed to nail the cosmic part of the Marvel Universe.
I agree.
Better than anybody. And he's also... And I feel like... One of the biggest things the DC universe is missing right now is any kind of fun at all.
Yeah.
It's like they're like, well, we have to be darker and nobody can enjoy anything. And just the glee of the idea that you'd get all of these characters in the same space.
Yeah.
And trying to figure out ways, you know, that Hulk and Superman could have a fight where Superman wouldn't just kick Hulk's ass all over the place or you know, just the idea, because you know the Justice League characters are gods,
right?
Whereas the Avengers are humans,
right? Or powered,
yeah,
but fallible,
mortal.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I like that.
All right. Question three: geeks love to ship, but some relationships just don't work out. What relationship in media would you split up, and why?
Hermione and Ron.
Oh, really?
I was gonna say that, you jackass.
Why would you split up Hermione and Ron?
I just think it's just like feels. I would have preferred it if there was no romance for Ron or Hermione
to
them being together. They don't have to find someone.
What is it about them being together that you don't?
It feels forced that two of the three have to hook up.
Mm-hmm.
They're just like, let them be awkward teens. Yeah. Like, there doesn't have to be a romance thing.
I get that.
You could keep even all of the weird dancing, like flirting, jealousy stuff that happens, and they could not end up together, and you'd still get all the awkward, fun teenage stuff, because like that doesn't have to be there with romance.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, why am I feeling jealous? I don't know. I'm confused by my body. Like, that can all still happen.
Sure.
It just felt unnecessary, and it felt like it didn't really fit either character, especially Hermione.
Okay, yeah, I get that. Yeah, I agree. It felt weird to me that Hermione would be like, cool, I'm going to settle for the first guy that struck my fancy at age 16.
Yeah.
Like, she seems like more of a go-getter.
She knew better.
Right?
Yeah, Harry and Ginny made more sense.
Right.
Right, All right, Tim, what do you think? What you got? You got somebody?
As I've mentioned before, I kind of got into watching Elementary, and I think,
you don't say.
Yeah, the thing that bugged me. And they never really got to a romance between Holmes and Watson. Ugh. But there was enough of an implication that Ugh. That could be there. And I'm like, I'm sorry. You don't get to do a romance between Holmes and Watson just because you cast a woman
right? that's, to play Watson. That's so, that's yeah. so boring.
And anybody, and honestly, any fans who are shipping it, I'm like, no. Holmes and Watson don't end up together. That doesn't make any sense. They are
it ruins
partners.
The whole dynamic.
They're partners. Yeah. There's and I'm not even it's not even well when they're you know Holmes and Watson could be gay and if they were two gay men I'd still be like no
yeah,
they
not...
shouldn't end up together.
Yeah,
it doesn't
weird.
Make sense.
It's funny in the BBC Sherlock when people start to maybe think or assume that they might be a couple. Because it's so uncharacteristic that they would be a couple, like when you see the two characters, you're like, obviously these two would never be together. They're not. They're such a motley mm-hmm. pair. Like they hate love each other, and so when someone assumes that they're together, it's funny because it's so impossible.
Well, and it's also funny because you know that it would make them it makes them crazy.
It makes them crazy.
To be assumed that.
Because they drive each other
fucking mad. It's not funny
because
ha ha gay. It's funny because ha ha he thinks you love him.
Yeah. He thinks you're dating that insufferable prick.
You're together all the time, you idiots.
Like, yeah. So
you're
like,
basically married.
Yeah. Like I could accept that, but even just hinting at a relationship sounds infuriating.
Tim, my answer is very similar because I would break up Mulder and Scully. That made me angry.
Oh yeah.
That made me so angry. As a lifelong fan of X-Files, like from day one, I was so into it. You guys, in college, I had magazine covers and collages. I'd cut out pictures. I had everything. I had them all. My room was plastered in college with it. We watched it on VHS all the time. We recorded it off the TV. Like, it was ridiculous. And so the movie comes out, and goddamn them getting together, and I was so angry. And that, I think, and then to throw in the stuff with the kid and everything else was just really terrible. It was so
like,
trite.
It feels like fan service. It feels like that was never the intent for those
characters. It very much felt like fan
and
service.
And the fans are like, I want them to get together, so they're finally like, all right.
Yeah, I would have said Buffy and Riley, but they're already broken up, so that's fine. But fuck Buffy and Riley.
Part of the thing with Scully and Mulder is like him flirting with her and being like kind of a dog.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, that's fine. I'm all right with that. Like, he's kind of a scoundrel a little
or
bit.
Or her being like, God, I actually kind of like this guy. Like, there being a kind of a will they, won't they was fine. That's never a problem. It's just that when it's like, oh, they did, they fell in love. It's like, all right.
Yeah.
All right, question four. Okay. So I'm just gonna read the question.
Yeah, these are great but awful questions.
Spirit animals don't exist, but we can't help but project human attributes onto critters. You've probably thought about your spirit animal. We call it Patronus. We don't say spirit animal, thanks. But what critter embodies the things that plague you? What is your spirit nemesis animal? So you're I guess your reverse Patronus in a way. I would like to say spirit animal is not very, it's problematic. Don't use it. Like, unless you feel that you really have a right to it and you're native, cool. But otherwise, like, white people, let's just not.
Yeah.
Let's just not. All right.
Yeah. Not a great term.
Patronus is easier.
Yeah.
And it means the same thing. So, guys, what is your...
Anti-patronus.
What is your nemesis? Yeah, your patron nemesis. Patron nemesis. Yes.
Is Tim's just a big fish with teeth?
It probably would be. I was actually going to say mine would probably be a sloth, because sloths don't do much, and it would be like...
And you think you do? Yeah.
I think I'm always busy, and I'm
all right.
And the idea of being lazy sounds really nice.
Well, then that's. So, I think this is more like the things that plague you. It says the what critter embodies the things that plague
that's
you.
That's what I mean. It's like a sloth life sounds great, and
that would sound like you're plagued by laziness, though. So you mean like something that you mean? Maybe you mean like a hive of bees, something that's really busy that plagues you, right?
I being busy doesn't plague me, but because I'm busy, I have this sometimes difficult time just getting moving.
Okay, that's fair.
Because there's so much to do, and sometimes you got to just start.
Yeah.
So I still think it's something that is. That holds me back. That makes me go, I'm just gonna
lie in bed. It's the darker side of
it. Okay, that's fair. I get it. I get it.
Lie in bed for the next hour.
All right, I get that. I get that.
And play Disney Emoji Blitz instead of getting up and doing the work that I have to do.
I get that. All right, that makes sense. That makes sense. All right, okay. Nick, what about you?
Mine would be a... What, so I was thinking like a roadrunner maybe. Like, what's a bird that moves around really fast but is also loud with bird noises?
Woodpecker?
Chirpy type bird noises.
Mm. Yeah, hummingbirds don't make too much noise.
No. I don't know. I don't think roadrunners make much noise.
No, so they only go meep.
It's some smaller bird that fluts about and doesn't hold still ever.
Yeah,
and
like a sandpiper.
And also has horrible, annoying bird sound.
It'd be okay. That two notes bird, wouldn't it?
It probably would be. It would be the two notes bird.
Yeah, that's a little brown bird.
Yeah.
Little brown birds are all fast.
Yeah, yeah. Fuck those birds.
All right.
Because, like, I don't, like, flit about. Like, I have pretty deliberate movements. Like, when I get going, it's, like, from here to there type thing.
Yeah.
And also, I hate bird song in general. Not specifically, but also specifically the two notes bird. More than any fucking other bird is the worst.
Yeah.
So that bird I call the nemesis.
Okay. Boy, I thought that I would have one by now, but I really can't think of anything. Because I'm not going insect, I'm going animal. Because I think that's, no, I don't want to, I don't, because like, yeah, spiders, but that's not going to be, like, that's just like, what's your biggest fear? That'd be more like the thing that comes out in the fear one with those, with that. That monster, that little creature that turns into the thing you fear in Harry Potter. So I would say probably something that, like, what's a stressed out animal? Like a greyhound.
I always think of chihuahuas as stressed out.
Well, like, greyhounds are super anxious and, like, die young because they have, like, they're constantly so worried. But, like, or like some kind of, I feel like there's another animal that's super like
anxiety animal.
Like an anxiety, like a
rabbit.
Yeah, like a rabbit or something that just animal trembles to death. Yeah, yeah, probably.
Mice.
All right, like maybe just a stream of mice. All right, question five. What physical thing have you made that you are most proud of?
Oh man.
I will start. I knit a Doctor Who scarf for Nick that is the proper size because he and Colin Baker are the same height. Tom Baker are the same height. Hmm. And I did it, so it was the proper length and it ended up being order. Like, and in the right order. And it took me 2 years because I don't knit very fast, but I did it and I was very proud of it. I could have given up at any time and I did not. So that's mine.
I'm torn between the Marceline axe guitar. But then also, like, no, you know what? It's our entertainment center right now is a pretty sweet deal. I took a LAC, like a 2 square by 4 square IKEA LAC shelf. Not LAC, whatever the Calax. That's what it is. Yeah. Calax. And I cut pegboard to fit the back and primed and painted it like a glossy cherry apple, like red, and attached that to the back. And I modified some of the shelving to fit some electronics in there. And I added shelves to it and put on doors and stuff and put it up on legs that I also painted that red to match. And, like, the pegboard on the back has all the electronics cords zip-tied to it, organized.
It's great.
With a power strip on it and everything. Like, I didn't make the IKEA shelf. I put together the IKEA shelf. But it is heavily modified. I went in with a plan and I executed it well and it looks really gorgeous.
It looks really great.
Like, it's the centerpiece of our living room and it's not sloppy at all. Like, it looks really clean and I really love it. I'm proud of it.
Yeah, it does look nice. I'm not much of a DIY person. I mean, I'm a writer. There's a lot of things I've written that I'm proud of.
That's
a
physical thing, though.
I know. That's what I'm working on here is a physical thing that I actually...
Technically, you made a kid, but...
But I know.
But you'd be proud of it.
I guess what I'll go with is... And I'll explain why, because it's dorky, but still. Right. The Disney castle, Lego castle.
Oh, yeah.
In my basement office.
It's in the studio.
It is in the studio. And, I mean, there are directions, right? But it looks cool.
It looks amazing.
And the thing is, when I do these big Lego builds, I do them with my younger son, with Devin. And we do it one... step a day. And so I'm proud of my patience.
Yeah, for sure.
Because I wanted to build that motherfucker in 2 hours.
Oh, yeah.
And done.
Yeah.
And it's like, it was like a 20-step thing.
Yeah.
So we built one step a day until
that's awesome.
It was done. And mm-hmm. so I guess I'm proud of that.
I think it's a good answer. Yeah. That was great. Thanks, Abram. Those were good questions.
Yeah.
They were hard
questions.
Those
were solid ones. Yeah.
And challenging questions are fun.
So if you want to send in your five questions, send them in to 5questions@geekswithoutgod.com. That's F-I-V-E or the number 5. Whatever the fuck. Either work. We'll get them both. If you are a Patreon supporter, we bump your questions up to the top of the list ahead of everyone else.
Just make sure you say it.
Yeah, just mention in the subject line that you're a Patreon supporter just so we can keep track. That'd be great. If you are a Patreon supporter and you throw us a couple bucks a month, you get to listen to episodes as we record them and put them together, which is usually you get 2 episodes weeks in advance. Kind of nice.
Because I'm super efficient.
It's true. And we record ahead of time. Gasp, the illusion.
Oh no, behind the curtain. if you could leave us a review on iTunes or Google Play and yeah. what have you, you can download Geeks Without God through pretty much every way you can get podcasts. And every way you can get podcasts, you can usually leave a rating. So we would appreciate that. Otherwise, there's always Facebook, Twitter, and
Instagram
Geeks which we haven't really done with anything with it yet, but
I suppose we should do that.
Otherwise, we'll have another episode up next Tuesday, and we will see you then.
Bye
from OmegaCon. No meeples were harmed in the recording of this podcast.
We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging and listen to past podcasts at geekswithoutgod.com. And you can follow us on Twitter at geekswithoutgod.
We're geeks. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
OmegaCon!